Trigger warning. The following episode contains references to death, factual inaccuracies, several entitled people making light of all these things. If any of the aforementioned topics cause you discomfort, you may want to listen to a different episode.
Orange, you glad there's no long-term side effects? I'm Adam.
Well, honey, the wallpapers are clean and the children have made spaghetti hair for all of their dolls. This is great! I'm Andy.
A humiliating killing machine, you say? I'm going to need a demonstration. I'm Kelly.
If I've learned anything today, it's if you have a name like Perilous, tread carefully. I'm Sean, and this is Acid Pop. Hello, everyone, and welcome back. Today, we're going to be talking about unfortunate inventions and inventors.
Like that damn Farnsworth and his television.
So, etymology of fortune comes from the Roman goddess of luck and chance, Fortuna.
Which that makes sense.
And invention comes from Latin invenir, which means to discover, which is kind of cool.
Is that what a veneer is?
Yeah, I thought that was a tooth thing.
Well, when you take it off, you discover the old tooth.
Oh, gross.
I've invented teeth.
Yeah, I mean, they don't talk about the guy anymore, but that was a big one.
There is a phobia. It is neophobia, which is the fear of new things.
The Luddite fear.
Yeah. And this comes from Greek neos, meaning new or young.
I fear the young.
Which, you know, I knew that, but I never connected it to the Matrix. Like, I don't know.
That's a good point.
Yeah, he's just called, you know, little guy. Young buck.
You must save us, child.
So we're on to our acid pop quiz. We're going to start with a series of true-false questions. And the point here is I'm going to name an invention, and you're going to guess whether the inventor was killed by it or not.
Instead of true or false, it's killed or not killed.
Yeah.
So grisly when Eli Whitney was pulled through that cotton gin.
But the cotton they got out of him was great.
So
that
smooth.
Poor man with the printing press.
Ouch, ouch.
Take this, Gutenberg.
Well, I guess we'll start there. Printing press.
Oh, no. Is the Gutenberg Bible actually made from him?
I mean, I liked the joke, but I don't really understand how a person would get killed by it.
Are we talking old or new?
What?
The original printing press?
Yeah.
The inventor of the printing press.
Yeah, not many people killed with Microsoft Word these days.
I feel like that one's false.
Yeah, like, he would have to be really dumb to get killed by a printing press, I feel. Unless they were, like, shipping the first one out and the box dropped on him.
I'm going to go with true. Like, he was fitting in, like, the little things, and some guy was like, what does this lever do?
I'm willing to buy a smashed thumb.
Yeah. Well, it is, in fact, true.
Explain.
In 1867, William Bullock, who was the inventor of the printing press, was attempting to unstick a stuck belt when his foot was snagged and dragged into the machine.
Whoop.
I guess since his name was Bullock, he didn't feel like he needed to go to the doctor for his crushed foot, but it became gangrenous, and then later, in an attempt to amputate it, he died.
Later, in an attempt to amputate it, he stuck it in the printing press to see if it would just take it off.
So this must have been like the electric printing press, not the original.
Oh, no, yeah, this was the original, 1867.
No, they had printing before then.
Well, I mean, the printing press, like the big machine, not like the hand, you know, letter setting, typesetting.
That hand crank that stupid Ben Franklin used.
It was the first recorded instance of somebody saying, stop the presses.
That costs us $3 million every time you say that.
So what about the brazen bull?
The torture thing?
Uh-huh.
I like the irony on that one. I'm going to say to you.
Yeah, that's too fun not to say true.
I'm going with true as well.
It is, in fact, true.
Oh, no.
In ancient Greece, there was a tyrant named Phalaris, and he was a pretty evil guy. And in an attempt to get on his good side, a man named Perilous came to him with the brazen bull as a way of executing criminals.
Phalaris thought that Perilous was a sick puppy, and so he asked him to show him what, because he described it to him. He's like, oh yeah, they'll be in there, and as they cry, it'll sound like a cow mooing. And he's like, why don't you crawl in there and let me see what it sounds like?
That's exactly what, like, I thought he was going to do.
I said, okay, and he locked him in.
I feel like I've seen this on Looney Tunes.
Yeah.
And he said, get on out of there, you varmint.
But as a bit of karma later when Phalaris was overthrown by Telemachus, he was also executed in the Brazen Bowl.
What a great invention. I'm glad we still have it these days. Although I hate those newfangled electric brazen bowls.
Yeah, I mean, they take forever to cool back down.
How about the guillotine?
Ooh, I'm thinking of everything I know about it.
This one seems too irony-ish. That's a word.
Yeah, I mean, the French Revolution was a mess, but like the guillotine guy, he was actually trying to be a nice guy. So I'm going to say false.
I mean, he was trying to be a nice guy, but I don't think that really matters when you're making an implement of execution.
Well, I mean, it's a numbers game at that point. Just think of how many people got their heads chopped off in that time period.
I'm hedging my bets and going for a triple true.
It's also true.
This one is false. So Joseph Ignace Guillotin, first of all, he didn't exactly invent the guillotine, but rather he suggested something like it as a merciful form of execution. His name became synonymous with the device, even though it was built by a man named Antoine Louis.
Anton Head Remover.
Guillotin died of old age in 1814.
So the guy was just like, wouldn't it be cool if?
Yeah.
And basically, then they attached his name to it.
I feel like any implement of execution is still cruel because they have to lead you to it.
Yeah, but again, this was during the French Revolution where, you know, death was pretty slow and painful all around.
Better than an axe or a rope.
Instead of announcing that I'm going on death row, just put me somewhere. And then like, oh, go outside for ice cream. And when they open the door, shoot me.
How about the electric razor?
Oh, God. I hope not.
Mr. Gillette.
Mr. Penn Gillette.
Penn Gillette did indeed. And he's dead. That's how he can do that magic.
And he became a lich.
Mm-hmm. He keeps on stealing the voices of these different tellers. True. It's too funny.
Yeah, like, I don't know. I want to hear the story of why this is true.
Everything I can think of is so grisly. I'm going with false just out of self-defense.
It is false. Jacob Schick patented the electric razor in 1928. He died at age 59 of an illness in the hospital.
So you're saying he's one Schick puppy?
Indeed. How about the Gatling gun?
I'm doing so bad at this. I just want all these inventors dead at their own inventions' hands.
Yes. Richard Gatling, creator of the Gatling gun, died to his own machine when he was like, they were lugging it up a hill, and unfortunately it fell off and rolled down the hill going, get, 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 and shot him.
That sound wasn't him caught in the tire as it was rolling?
No, get, get, get.
I'll say true again.
This one feels plausible. I'm going to say true.
This one is false. Though I'm going to award half a point to Andy because it was invented by Richard Gatling. Oh, dear. So named after Richard Jordan Gatling, he invented the Gatling gun using some twisted logic. He felt that there were too many soldiers being shot on the battlefield, so he wanted to invent one gun that could do the work of hundreds of soldiers. One soldier would be in danger, but they could face hundreds of enemies.
So basically, we turn all of our armies into two guys with the ridiculous guns.
Yep. And turn them loose. Gatling died in his daughter's house in 1903 at age 84.
Was he proud of his works?
Yeah, he was. So that concludes the true false portion. Most of those were ones that I had heard of before. Like, oh, you know, guillotine was beheaded by his own invention, but not true. It was interesting. These things get around. So we're on to our fill in the blank. So what's going to happen here is I'm going to basically describe an invention of sorts, and then I'm going to ask you what it turned out being, because this was stuff that was invented more or less accidentally. So we'll start with Harvey Coover. All Harvey Coover wanted to do was make a reliable, clear substance. During World War II, Mr. Coover was trying to make an improved gun sight, but his material refused to solidify and just made a goopy mess. In 1951, he tried to repurpose his invention as a heat-resistant fabric sealer for airplane canopies, but the stuff was so sticky it was almost impossible to work with. What did he make?
A reliable, clear substance that is sticky. Melted sugar.
Yes, he invented candy.
Before 1951, there was no candy. It's odd.
He invented Elmer's glue.
Oh,
rubber cement.
Yeah, that's a good one. I'll say super glue.
Yeah, well, technically Adam gets it. It was super glue.
So he did a bunch of tests for eyeglass lenses with this stuff? Like, uh-oh.
Yeah. Yeah, basically he was trying to turn super glue into plastic, but it wasn't working out so hot.
Oh, no.
And it took him the better part of 10 years to be like, wait a second.
Adhesive?
All my things that were stuck together are still stuck together. There could be a business in this.
Well, this is just super.
So in 1940, coal was a common heat source, but it left soot all over everything. So brothers Noah and Joseph McVicker invented a product that could be dragged along wallpaper to remove soot and released it. But shortly after they did, natural gas became dominant, and this drastically reduced their market. But they successfully remarketed it as what?
I know this one, so let everybody else go first.
Started as a wallpaper cleaner?
Uh-huh.
So it rolled on walls?
Yeah, more or less.
I mean, all I can think of is that it must have been like a vacuum. So that's what I'm going with. It's an early vacuum.
Okay.
They invented the paint roller.
Believe the correct answer is Play-Doh.
That is correct. So with piles of unsold wallpaper cleaner lying around, the duo's sister, a school teacher, had taken to giving globs of it to her students to play with. Shortly after, the brothers re-released their patented Play-Doh and became an overnight success.
Huh.
I mean, a non-toxic substance that you can sculpt and yep. also happens to clean your walls?
And the kids can eat it?
Mm-hmm. Salty.
So Gerhard Schrader was a humanitarian who wanted to fight hunger throughout the world. He was attempting to create a safe insecticide, but accidentally invented something else. What was it?
Safe insecticide.
Giant insects.
God.
Bum, 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 there's a market for this. Agent Orange.
Mm.
He took his insecticide and instead he made sour spray candy.
Who figured that
one out? I'm sticking with giant insects. Right. He accidentally mutated them. Grasshoppers the size of cats.
So Dr. Schrader inadvertently created sarin gas.
Oh, oh, so close.
A colorless, odorless neurotoxin, a single drop of which can kill a human in minutes.
Jeez, take that, insects.
Very, very successful at a killing thing, though.
Yeah. It is an extremely potent weapon of mass destruction, and as a result, Dr. Schrader is known as the father of nerve agents.
I don't think
which was not a title he wanted.
No.
He's going for father of dead aphids.
So Konstantin Fahlberg came home from a hard day at the lab, breaking down the chemical components of coal tar to find his wife had made some biscuits. He ate them and found they tasted delightfully sweet. He hadn't realized that he'd forgotten to wash his hands. What were they covered in?
I think I know this one. I think it's
some sort of artificial sweetener.
Fake
yeah.
sugar.
Yeah.
I was going to go with aspartame.
Okay.
Yep.
Let me just put my arm around both your shoulders. I'll just say aspartame.
Well, you guys pretty much got it. He had invented, or not invented, but rather discovered, anhydrothalsulfamine benzoic acid.
That's what I said.
Yep. Which has a strangely sweet flavor. This being a bit of a mouthful, he shortened it to the name saccharin and patented it, changing the diet food landscape forever.
Hmm? Mm, coal tar.
So this next one, I didn't figure there was any chance you guys would get it, so we're going to go the other way around. Alfred Fielding and Mark Chavanis invented bubble wrap, but what did they originally market it as?
Ooh. Contraceptive.
The funnest contraceptive. When you hear the popping, don't come a knock. It is, ooh, I'm going to say something like it's a wartime invention. It's like bulletproof vests. Wait, was that Papa Gunshot?
They were originally going to sell it to Dr. Scholl's as a shoe liner.
Well, they were trying to market 3D plastic wallpaper.
Not to anybody with children, by the way.
Yeah. Luckily, that never took off.
If I had bubble wrap all over my walls, it's like, oh, check out my fancy 70s wallpaper, Adam.
But just think of it. If they had kept going down that route, like, every bubble would have, like, goldfish in it or something, or...
I couldn't...
You'd have an earthquake-proof house.
Just think of how quiet this house would be. aside from the popping. Ship.
And that concludes our acid pop quiz. So now we're going to talk about some stories of some inventions and inventors. First, we're going to start with... Well, I'll get into what it is. So through the late 1940s and into the 1950s, pharmaceutical companies were making a killing with all kinds of new and innovative drugs. At this time, there was almost no regulation on drugs, and the bar for safety was criminally low.
Those were the days.
Basically, if you had a group of 20 volunteers that didn't melt after taking your drug, it could go to market. There was an extreme abuse of both sedatives and stimulants at the time, and there was a rush to find safer alternatives. In 1954, a German chemist named Kemi Grünenthal synthesized something called thalidomide.
Oh.
Yep. So testing of the drug on mice and rats showed that it was an effective sleep aid and had no side effects that could be found.
Hooray.
Yeah.
What could go wrong? I'm Kemi the chemist.
So in 1956, just 2 years after they synthesized the drug, it went to market as a cure for stress, anxiety, and sleeplessness. With no apparent side effects, the use of the drug exploded through Germany and across the globe. One Australian obstetrician named Dr. William McBride discovered that it was also effective at curing nausea and started prescribing it to pregnant women to aid with morning sickness.
Just ruined it for everyone.
I could be sleeping right now.
By 1960, an epidemic of phocomelia was sweeping the globe, and scientists were afraid it was caused by a contagious element and were scrambling to find a source. Phocomelia, if you don't know, is when you have babies born with too many limbs or too few limbs or too many parts or too few parts, basically.
Parts on this baby?
I mean, I think the baby could decide what's too many and what's too few.
So it didn't take long to pin down the wonder drug thalidomide as the cause, and by 1962, the drug was banned almost everywhere. Unfortunately, by this point, more than 10,000 babies were born with malformed limbs in more than 50 countries. Though, interestingly, not so much in America. An FDA inspector named Francis Kelsey was not convinced by safety claims of thalidomide and refused to allow the use of a drug in America until more evidence was available.
That darn FDA. Inhibiting our freedoms.
And also of interest, thalidomide doesn't seem to cause birth defects in other species, and the effects on humans depends heavily on when the drug was taken. So, for instance, taking the drug in your 20th day of pregnancy damages the brain, the 21st day damages the eyes, the 22nd day damages the ears and face, and the 24th through the 28th damages the arms and legs.
It's like the opposite of designer baby.
After day 42, it is no longer harmful to the fetus. But for that small window, it's devastating. It's estimated that roughly half of thalidomide babies died before or during labor.
Jim Henson's thalidomide babies.
Those that lived.
I want to hear that theme song.
Hi, Mammy.
You know the parasite that has frogs grow too many legs?
Yeah. Oh, so thalidomide just turns babies into frogs?
No, Andy, there's a frog in Muppet Babies.
I thought all those kids had too many parts, like a pig snout or a bear head.
They get too many parts, but I didn't say from what species.
This boy has too many frog legs.
Give him to the nanny.
So the babies that did manage to survive were severely impaired and put into a world that largely didn't know what to do with them. A whole new world of engineering had to be invented to allow these people to function normally. And that is the sad short run that thalidomide had, but long-reaching consequences.
Well, yeah, it, like you said, back in those days, it was like, okay, so what does this do? Oh, it makes people happy. You know, just give it to them.
Yeah.
That's what they want. Cigarettes? Sure. Awkward.
Cocaine.
No, the cigarettes go straight to my T-zone, and I get like a boost.
Is that a thing? What's a T-zone?
I can't remember if that's a beer commercial or a cigarette commercial. It's like, go straight to your T-zone. It's making you smile.
I think we need to do more science about the T-zone.
And now pregnant women can be prescribed pretty much nothing.
Yeah.
Damn.
Which probably the safer option.
Mm-hmm. So next, we're going to talk about Agent Orange, which Adam mentioned earlier. So this was around that same time.
I was actually just reading about this recently. Did you know there was more agents?
Oh, yeah.
There was like a whole rainbow.
Mm-hmm. Were you reading about the Power Rangers?
Yeah.
Agent Grape.
So Agent Orange was an amazing new herbicide, and it was sort of invented in the early 1940s, but development of it continued through the 1940s and into the 1950s. The herbicide that would be called Agent Orange was tested in various places, though those tests were limited in their scope and duration. During the ridiculously long, cruel, and uninformed Vietnam War, the U.S. and South Vietnamese were desperately trying to find a way to cut through the thick tropical jungles that concealed the enemy. In November of 1961, President John Kennedy worked with President Nguyen Dinh Diem to initiate Operation Ranch Hand. So for the next 10 years, the U.S. would spray untold acres of Vietnam with 20 million gallons of herbicide. Of those 20 million, roughly 13 million were Agent Orange. Trees, animals, crops, and people were drenched and Agent Orange for a decade. Unfortunately for everyone involved, in addition to destroying plant matter, Agent Orange also damages genes. In people who are exposed directly to Agent Orange, this means an increased risk of cancer and neurological damage.
It's amazing there's life on that peninsula at all anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah, it really is.
But with all the napalm and the Agent Orange.
In future generations, though, the effects were numerous and horrible. Children born to the parents exposed to Agent Orange can suffer from cleft palate, mental disorders, blindness, deafness, extra limbs, or not enough limbs, or a grab bag of any of those.
I've got cleft limbs.
I have too many clefts.
What's worse, much like mercury, Agent Orange accumulates in fatty tissue, which means if you eat a plant with Agent Orange, that's pretty bad. If you ate a cow that ate a bunch of plants with Agent Orange, that's much worse.
Oh, boy.
Due to the colossal amount of Agent Orange that was used, it's estimated that 4 million Vietnamese citizens were exposed, and of those 4 million, 3 million suffered adverse effects.
Wow.
Though the U.S. government, in its continued attempts to ignore the Vietnam War, thinks those numbers are exaggerated a bit.
Of course.
So three generations later, children are still being born with issues and people are still dying of cancer at an accelerated rate. And that is modern Vietnam.
We are really good at this. Hey guys, what does this do? It kills plants? Is that all it does? I don't know, John, but it does kill the plants.
It does what we need it to do, so no more testing.
I guess you don't generally run herbicides through the FDA.
Yeah.
I guess. Like, not only was it an herbicide, it was like a wartime herbicide.
Yeah, I feel like America's war strategy is like to start a war and then invent something so horrible that everyone locks themselves inside and cries for a while.
Yeah, let's start another war so we can innovate.
I love it. Kickstart that economy.
And then we follow it up by saying no one can ever use this evil thing that we used on civilians.
America called dibs.
Yeah. Agent Orange, we've never heard of that. What's a Vietnam? Look, we fired Nixon.
That's the sandwiches, right? Oh, so our next story here is a story that I love very much. People love them some pottery and always have.
Yeah, I go to
tell
the barn.
Man.
Somewhere between 600 and 1300 CE, the Chinese invented porcelain, or qi. In the 1500s, China started a brisk trade with Europe for porcelain, but they closely guarded the secret of its creation. For about 200 years, porcelain grew in popularity throughout Europe, and by the late 1600s was the most expensive substance next to gold.
Yeah.
But no one outside of China had any idea how to make the damn stuff. In 1701, a 19-year-old German named Johann Friedrich Böttger was a talented young alchemist, and he had finally cracked the ultimate secret of alchemy, turning base metals into gold.
Of course he did. They always do.
That's not a job you can get anymore, is it?
Well, that's about how much I love alchemists.
Yeah.
Look, I've made the Philosopher's Stone. Just put it in your cup and you'll live forever, Mr. King. Give me money.
Well, he had demonstrated this several times to astonished audiences, but when the Elector of Saxony, Frederick Augustus, heard about it, he came to Böttger and offered him a job as his official gold maker. So, Böttger,
good work if you can get it.
Oh, at that point you say, I don't need your job. I make gold.
Lots of room for advancement.
Well, Böttger said that he was flattered, but he couldn't make gold right now because he kind of sort of lost the recipe.
And he brings up a good point. Like, why would somebody who is able to make gold need a job from anyone?
Pay me iron.
I say job, but we'll get to it here.
Okay.
Augustus told him that it was no problem that he forgot the recipe and he could take all the time he needed to think of it again. He'd just lock him up until he had enough gold.
Meanwhile, the guy's like, shit, my sleight of hand magic book is still under the bed.
So for the next 5 years, Böttger was either toiling away with noxious chemicals or desperately running for his life, only to be dragged back and locked up again.
No.
It's a really cool miniseries in this.
Despite Böttger being an obvious fraud, he was still regarded as one of the most talented alchemists in the world. And another actually talented alchemist named Ehrenfried Walther von Schirnaas.
That's a great name.
Yeah, it's a mouthful. He'd been trying to make porcelain for years, so he came to Böttger and asked him if they could team up and crack the secret. Böttger said, I don't need you. Do you know who I am? I'm Johann Friedrich Böttger. But after another year of being locked up in his lab, Böttger swallowed his pride and accepted Schirnhaus's offer. So the duo finally pieced together the process, and Augustus was overjoyed and immediately set up facilities to manufacture porcelain. Böttger became incredibly rich and famous, and Schirnhaus died under mysterious circumstances.
Yeah. Hey, Böttger, can you sniff this vial? I think I created sarin gas. No, it's like every time I hear about alchemists, my wife has she knows a lot about John Dee, who is like the official alchemist of the Queen.
Right now?
Oh, yeah.
No, like not right now, but like a long time ago. And it's always the same story with all of these alchemists. It's like, I can do this. And so he's like, will you do it for me? And they go, no, not. I can't do it like right now. I'm like, well, you can do it in a jail cell.
Yeah. I remember when I first learned about alchemy in high school, we were watching a video on the subject and we were learning about the Philosopher's Stone, which is called a stone, but really is more of a universal solvent. And it's something that can dissolve anything. And then once it does, you can rebuild the broken down components into whatever you want. But in the video that we were watching, it was like, but that raises the interesting question. If you have something that dissolves everything, what do you put it in?
It's actually been invented numerous times. They're just all at the core of the earth.
The philosopher's flask.
So our final story today is the sad story of a very brilliant man. Walter Hunt was an inventor, and he was a brilliant inventor, though something of a dope when it came to things like filing patents and selling them.
Kept on handing them to Einstein. And
in 1833, Hunt came up with an idea for an automatic sewing machine. He thought it was cool, but weird, so he never showed it to anyone out of embarrassment.
That's women's work.
What I've created is very weird.
In 1846, Elias Howe patented what he called the lock stitch sewing machine, which he gave to a sewing company called Singer for a share in the profits. When Hunt saw it, he realized that it was his exact idea from 14 years earlier.
Uh-oh.
He sued Howe and Singer and demanded a slice of the royalties, producing his original designs. A judge declared that Hunt had indeed invented the idea and should be given credit for it. However, since he had failed to file a patent, Howe and Singer had no obligation to compensate him. So in 1849, he was working on a rifle that could fire over and over again.
He patented his former partner-killing rifle.
He called it the volitional repeater, but it had a few kinks to work out. Desperate for money, he sold the nearly complete design to an entrepreneur named George Arrowsmith. George Arrowsmith started a gun production facility and gave the design to three engineers to work the last few kinks out.
He said, I don't want to miss a thing.
Those three engineers were Benjamin Henry, Horace Smith, and Daniel B. Wesson. Smith and Wesson split off to form their own company, and Henry left to join up with Oliver Winchester. And the two of them made the Henry repeating rifle, one of the deadliest weapons of the Civil War. Smith and Wesson, Henry and Winchester, all are synonymous with guns, and all of their designs are based on Hunt's volitional repeater. Though his biggest failing also came in 1949. Having learned his lesson from his sewing machine, Hunt filed so many patents that he ran up a debt with the patent office. He owed them $15, which is roughly $400 in today's money. And once again strapped for cash, Hunt sat down to make some money with the only thing he had, a piece of bent wire. After twisting the wire around and back a few times, he realized that he had made a pin that he could be placed in fabric and then closed to prevent poking. He quickly patented the idea and sold it to W.R. Grace & Company for $400, or about $12,000 in today's money.
And was immediately cheated out of the money.
Hunt paid off his debt, and W.R. Grace & Company released what they called safety pins and proceeded to make millions.
Oh, no.
In his later years, Hunt never did stop shouting foul at the extremely lucrative Singer Sewing Company. And in 1859, Singer agreed to award Hunt $40,000, which is about $1.2 million in today's money, just
pretty good.
So that he would shut up and leave him alone. Before he received the first payment, Hunt died of pneumonia.
No. Meanwhile, Singer's wringing their hands like, we got the pneumonia device ready.
With my flu gun.
This is my flugelhorn. That just sucks. He's like, okay, I made this thing. Do you want it?
Yep.
If ever a man needed a business manager.
Yeah. And that's the sad story of Walter Hunt. And that was the last story I had. Does anybody have any personal invention anecdotes?
I used to have a book when I was a kid that was like accidental inventions.
Yeah.
Like a chocolate chip cookies.
Yeah.
Were apparently an accident. Where the lady was trying to make chocolate cookies, and she dumped in semi-sweet chocolate chunks thinking they would just melt in there.
Uh-huh.
And therefore, chocolate chip cookies. Scotchgard was also I can't remember what they were trying to invent, but the people who were in the lab were like, oh, we gotta go play tennis. And as they were rushing out of the lab, one guy spilled the stuff on his shoe. And as they were playing tennis, he noticed that one part of his shoe was just completely white the whole time, while the rest of it was nasty from the clay court. And the last one, well, I didn't really believe this as a kid either, but they were like, yeah, there was this one Viking that invented cheese.
Yeah, didn't he like keep milk in a goat's stomach for like a month?
Kept melting milk in a sheep's stomach or a goat's stomach. But I feel like this is something that every culture figured out. Probably the same way.
Yeah.
I don't have any invention stories.
Well, the thing that I've run into several times in my life is that people misconstrue the word invention with the word idea, and they're not the same thing. So if you have an idea, that doesn't count. Because if that was the case, yeah, I mean, if that was the case, I could go down to the patent office and be like, I'm going to patent the idea of teleportation. If anyone if anyone comes up with it, you call me and they have to come pay me. Like, you have to actually have a workable prototype before it can actually be an invention that you can patent, or at the very least some very detailed blueprints. So let that be a lesson to people out there, that because I know a lot of people in my life, they're like, I don't know, they see something that someone else made and they're like, I had that idea years ago. It's like, yeah, but did you actually work out how to do it, or did you just think that would be cool if someone did it?
I do have $1 million idea, Sean. Get back at me.
Yeah, well, we'll discuss it off the air.
Yeah, people put a lot of weight behind ideas. You get that in the writing world too, where like a lot of writers have people come up to them and say, I have this great idea, you just write the book and we'll split the proceeds 50-50.
Yeah,
well, you get that a lot with people sending like the Simpsons scripts or something.
Yeah,
and then later on the Simpsons, because they've made what, like 5 million episodes,
yeah,
eventually makes an episode that was kind of like that. It's like, you use my script. Like, no, anytime somebody sends us something like that, we throw it in the shredder.
Yeah.
We have writers.
Yeah, one of the hardest lessons that I think I had to learn as a kid, and I think a lot of kids have to learn, is that no one cares about your idea. Like, every kid's dream job is to go up like, I just want to think up cool stuff. That's what I want to do.
That's my dream job.
Yeah.
That and alchemist.
Not much of a market for that.
I'm telling you, Adam, alchemists always end up the same way. You're going to learn sleight of hand magic and then go to jail.
No. I'm the one that's going to get it right.
Well, if nobody else has any personal stories, we're going to talk about one more story for our What Are Your Morals Worth? Does anyone know what the Poison Squad is?
It's a failed pilot that went against the A-Team.
It's not the Rainbow Agents?
No.
I mean, I feel like I could hazard some guesses, but I've never heard of them before. All right.
Well, that's good, because I was going to tell you anyway. The Poison Squad was formed in 1902. And basically, in the early 1900s, just before this, I think it was like 1901, the FDA was formed. And they were putting in standards for food safety. And basically, they needed a way to test out what was safe and what wasn't. So one man went and got a grant from the government and then hired 12 people to basically eat food with different additives that he would increase until something went wrong, basically.
And they all got superpowers and became the Poison Squad.
Well, they were all like, they all knew what they signed up for. And like, basically each one of them would eat the same thing every day. And I was like, oh, this today it has just a little bit more borax than the last time. And the Poison Squad was around for 5 years, and they suffered all kinds of adverse effects. They, you know, vomited and had chills and sleepless nights and things. But eventually one of them died of tuberculosis, and his family claimed that he died of tuberculosis because his immune system was weak from eating all this weird stuff.
That could be.
And that was what finally broke up the Poison Squad. So my question for you is, how much would I have to pay you annually to be on the Poison Squad for 5 years?
That's going
to
be a heck of a salary.
For a second one, Charles, yeah. Like, they made them eat the same thing every day. I was like, how about this lasagna? Is lasagna killing you yet?
Yeah, I want to be in the very early phases of the Poison Squad when they were still trying to figure out what the heck poison was.
Yeah. Is it blueberries or blueberries poison?
No, he's just turning blue.
We need to eat more pie. We need to test this again.
Get the pie squad on it. I mean,
so as an added bonus, I'll toss in that the Poison Squad was very highly renowned at the time, and they had their own theme song, and people would high five them if they saw them in the street.
Do you have this theme song?
I mean, I don't have a recording of it.
Quick,
but,
Andy, give me your superhero Poison Squad name.
Poison Squad. They eat all the shit you don't want. Well, that makes him more like a garbage disposal.
And it was easy for people in the street to recognize him because they were the ones bleeding from their gums.
They were the ones that every time a mosquito bit them, the mosquito would drop dead.
Well, look, it's Jerry from the Poison Squad and that flock of crows that surrounds him.
He appears to have the smoke monster from Fern Gully following him.
Yeah, that's right.
Hexus.
Toxic love. And that was their theme song.
I mean, just at a very minimum, I'm going to have to say like $100,000 a year.
Yeah.
Adam, what have I told you about valuing your body?
Well, none of that. Again,
value it.
You're on the Poison Squad today, so the odds of any of you dying of tuberculosis are pretty low, and nobody else died. That was it.
That's true.
So you're not going to die from doing this job. It's just going to be very unpleasant.
$175.
Wow. $1.75 a year.
A year. Wow.
I get to eat all sorts of cool stuff.
Get to high five people on the street.
Yeah. My hand falls off. $175,000.
My skin is poisonous on contact.
Oh, you're that guy from Toriko.
Being miserable all the time is no fun.
Says the pregnant lady.
And I think I'll settle at $150.
Is the food laced with additives good?
Yeah.
Good food.
They have to make it as bland as possible so no flavors interfere with the poison.
I've just been promised it's good.
Here, have one of these cocaine cannolis.
Get enough of them.
fucking left canola.
I didn't know that about myself.
5 years?
5 years. 5 year contract with the poison squad.
$250,000.
Woo. Yeah, see, it's not going to be fun to eat chemicals. And, you know, the first year is not going to be so bad because they're just going to keep ramping it up. So it's probably going to be year two or three before things start to get uncomfortable. And the thing is, I just have to eat. Like, that's it. I can do whatever else that I want. And that's pretty cool.
Basically, we're just talking about the risk.
Yeah, yeah. Which, again, I will guarantee your safety. You won't die from any of the stuff you're going to eat. And that being said, I don't think it would take very much. I could just sit at home and eat 3 meals a day and that be my job. Yeah, I'd do that for $75,000 a year.
Jokes on them. I had a basal
war beforehand.
What
about long-term side effects?
Nah.
There aren't any of
those. You'll be fine.
Those don't happen.
Yeah, I mean, it's a government program, Kelly. I'm sure they know what they're doing.
That's what we learned today.
Men who stare at goats.
It's a good movie.
All right, well, I think that's all we have for today. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next week.
Thanks to my co-hosts, and thank you so much for tuning in today. If you would like more information about today's episode, check out our website at acidpoppodcast.podbean.com. You can also find us on Twitter at acidpoppodcast and contact us at acidpoppodcast@gmail.com. Be sure to like, subscribe, and give us all the stars you can. Stay safe out there, and we'll see you next week.
Andy has to turn off the air.
No air conditioning. Bad.
That sounds like you guys are falling down a well while we're recording.
Give me a second. Do, 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 do.